It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As the Packers host the Minnesota Vikings on Sunday, you might notice some players around the NFL wearing additional padding they put over their helmets.
They're called guardian caps, and NFL players are now allowed to wear them during games this season. The goal is to reduce head injuries.
We learn about the latest developments in reducing the risk of concussions and other head injuries during play with Mike McCray, a neurosurgery and neurology professor at Medical College of Wisconsin and director of its brain injury research program. McCray has served on the NFL's Head, Neck, and Spine Committee. Mike, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
It's a pleasure to be with you today. Thanks for having me.
Some football players are choosing to wear these large, soft-shelled pads over their football helmets, and the NFL has authorized the use of what are called guardian caps. Can you talk about what they are?
Yeah, so as you've alluded to, this is a soft outer shell that attaches to the exterior of a football helmet. This device and piece of equipment has been out in circulation for, I would say, somewhere in the order of about 5 years. You're now seeing it for the first time in regular season football games at the NFL level. But if you're a football parent, it's very likely that your high school or middle schooler has possibly been wearing a guardian cap for the last several years at the local level. And while most of the attention in this space is focused on concussion prevention, and there have been numerous policy and rule changes, as well as clinical practice changes to prevent concussion, the other side of the coin is really about reducing repetitive head impact exposure. Lower magnitude blows to the head that don't cause concussive brain injury, but nonetheless are a target for prevention to help promote the health and safety of, in this case, football players, but really all contact sport athletes.
You referenced that new this season, the NFL allowing players to wear guardian caps during games. Have you observed anything about their uptake? Are players wearing them?
Yeah, certainly you're seeing, some traction amongst roster players currently in 2024. I suspect this will be like most things in sport and in prevention, that it'll start slowly and gain progress over time. Not to mention our young athletes at the youth and high school and collegiate level, seeing professional players wear the guardian cap may make them more inclined to adopt the same.
That's so interesting you say that, because on the reverse side, are there any stigmas with this extra protective padding, like as in the athlete might not look and feel as tough when wearing it?
You know, my experience in working with professional athletes is that has really done a 180 in the last 20 years. So, for instance, when I first started in concussion research and clinical care more than 30 years ago, athletes were very resistant to discussion around head injury. They avoided us like the plague for clinical evaluation if they were suspected of a concussion during practice or games. But more often than not, it's the athlete now, him or herself, who's coming forward, reporting symptoms, requesting evaluation, and seeking out information on their health and safety and prevention strategies. So that certainly would have been in play when I got started in this work 3 decades ago, but we now have an era and a generation of informed athletes who I say have grown up in the concussion age. 30 years ago, you know, this was not even recognized as an injury, and the best we had available to us was holding up 2 fingers and asking, you know, where are we and how many fingers on the sideline? And now we have advanced protocols that are informed by science, and really the ultimate benefactor of that work has been athletes themselves as we've improved the health and safety of sport.
I want to turn our attention to the degenerative brain disease known as chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE. There is this new research in the medical journal JAMA Neurology surveying former professional football players, finding 1/3 think they have CTE. How widespread might it be?
Yeah, so the main point of this recent publication that you're referring to is of just critical importance, and it's something we've been following now for a couple of decades. Certainly the incidence of CTE, based on our research and that of other groups around the country, is thought to be far less than a third of former football players. Certainly there have been studies suggesting higher rates of CTE, but really those studies have been confounded by something we call ascertainment bias, that if you're only studying people with who clearly have some form of brain disease, whether it be Alzheimer's disease or CTE, you're likely to find a very high rate of the disease in that population. But when we look at an all-comers population of NFL players, and we have been conducting a study here at MCW and Frater over the last several years looking at long-term outcomes in former NFL players, we find that most players, in fact, are remaining healthy late into life, both cognitively and physically. But there is due to a variety of risk factors and reasons, there seems to be a small percentage of former athletes, not just football players, who are experiencing cognitive decline potentially associated with their history of concussion and repetitive head impact exposure. The challenge we face as scientists and clinicians is determining what those risk factors are and how do we prevent young athletes from being affected by them. The upshot of this recent JAMA paper, however, is that we find that a significant percentage and proportion of former athletes are walking around with concerns that they may have chronic traumatic encephalopathy, with or without any real signs or symptoms of neurodegenerative disease. And the main concern here is that they see a doom and gloom outlook associated with chronic traumatic encephalopathy that they may not even have, and elect to make a impulsive decision or walk around with ideation about ending their life to avoid that slippery slope that they are fearing unrealistically. When in fact, the paper really makes the point is that our work and that of groups around the country demonstrates that most of the health concerns that former athletes face are due to modifiable factors. Just the same as you and I, they have to do with our weight, our nutrition, our exercise, our mental health, all things that can be addressed and the health problems associated with those risk factors reversed in order to restore a longer life of health and function.
I want to end with your work on the NFL's Head, Neck, Spine Committee, the neuropsychology consultant at the Green Bay Packers. When you talk about the future of reducing these types of injuries, reducing the blows to the head, what is being done at the committee level for this work?
The landscape has changed dramatically in terms of how we care for athletes affected by concussion at all competitive levels. So there are now international consensus guidelines that dictate the evaluation, management, and return to play after sport-related concussion. Return to play after concussion has gone from 15 minutes to 15 days in about 15 years. And now on average, athletes are withheld from play somewhere in the order of about 12 to 15 days, which allows adequate brain recovery and significantly reduces the risk of repeat concussion, which is where athletes get in the most trouble. There have been numerous policy changes, both within rulemaking in the game and how the game is played itself. This year, most recently, the introduction of the Guardian Cap and changes in the kickoff rules. But there's also been a major change that we don't see on Sundays as to how athletes prepare in practice. So our research finds that about 3/4 of all concussions in football and about 2/3 of all head impact exposure occurs during practice, not in games. So at all competitive levels now, contact is limited over the course of the season. We've done away with two-a-day practices in college. And there have been numerous rule changes and policy changes, all aimed at improving the health and safety of athletes. Again, not within just American football, but across all contact and collision sports. So, you know, I wear this hat as researcher and clinician in the neurosciences, but I'm also a parent. And what I take sort of great consolation in is that contact sports have never been safer than they are now. Certainly relative to when we played, again, 40 years ago when I was younger. But, you know, parents can now have great confidence and faith in if their young athlete is affected by concussion, they're going to get proper care and a very conservative approach to not only returning to play, but decision making about their son or daughter's fitness to continue participation in sport. None of that thinking was evident 20 to 25 years ago.
So much change. Mike, thank you for the update. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks. It was a real pleasure. I appreciate it.
That was Mike McCray, professor of neurosurgery and neurology at the Medical College of Wisconsin and directs its brain injury research program. He served on the NFL's Head, Neck, and Spine Committee and is a neuropsychology consultant to the major pro sports teams in Wisconsin. As we learn about efforts to reduce head injuries in sports, we find out about advancements in protective gear. A Wisconsin researcher is developing his own protective materials to prevent injuries and concussions. Ramathasan Thevamaran is an associate professor of mechanical engineering at UW-Madison. Theva, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks for having me. It's a great pleasure to be here.
Your lab has developed a new material for helmets to prevent concussions. Can you tell us about the projects you're working on and where it might be useful?
Right. So in my lab at University of Wisconsin-Madison, we work on a material system called vertically aligned carbon nanotubes. So this is a hierarchical material, meaning it will have structural features starting from fewer nanometers all the way up to several millimeter scale. And it gives us a huge design freedom that I can tailor these structural features across all these length scales, going from fewer nanometers, that's like few tens of atoms, and all the way up to several millimeter scale where we have the helmet padding. Give you an idea that the basic building block over here is a carbon nanotube. So this carbon nanotube is almost 1,000 times smaller than the diameter of the hair. So you can imagine that it's a very tiny, tiny, tiny element. But then when you stack them up, a lot of them together like a forest, they provide you this vertically aligned morphology that we can use as a cushion. And one of the nicest thing about this material system is it's extremely lightweight because it's made up of carbon. And so it can be used in several applications where you would need exceptional properties at lightweight, particularly in the context of sports, you need agility. So in that context, it's very useful. The second advantage is that we have shown through several studies compared to polymeric forms like the what is used in Guardian caps, this material behaves in a rate-independent fashion. That means whether you impact at low velocities or high velocities or compress them very slowly, it behaves exactly the same way. So we would call it strain rate-independent behavior. So this material exhibits superior properties over the polymeric material that are typically used. In addition to that, because this is a carbon-based material, it also gives you very high thermal conductivity and thermal stability. So you can wear the material across different temperature regimes as well.
Oh, so it could have cooling properties.
Absolutely. We have shown through our studies in a laboratory setting that this material provides you much higher effective thermal conductivity and thermal diffusivity, so it can give you cooling properties. Also, the mechanical properties. Vice also, the mechanical properties will be stable whether it's in a cold weather or in an extreme hot desert weathers. So they can find application in various scenarios, not just in sports, but also in the combat and various other, say, skiing and various other applications.
So military ballistic helmets, bulletproof materials, you know, can you talk about some of these different applications?
Absolutely. So in Wisconsin, we have a program called PANTHER program. The PANTHER stands for physics-based neutralization of threats to human tissues and organs. So it's led by one of my colleagues, Professor Christian Frank, and supported by the Office of Naval Research program that is managed by Dr. Tim Bentley. The idea of this program is that we wanted to understand the basics of traumatic brain injury. And then we take that understanding and then we try to design material system that can allow us to prevent potential traumatic brain injuries. And then ultimate goal is to develop pathways that can be used to heal the traumatic brain injury over a time, right? Mm-hmm. So in this particular program, there are lots of different partners, and some of them are also industrial partners. Some applications vary from, as I mentioned, military helmets to protect soldiers during combat. It could be from direct impact, or else, like as you said, ballistic penetration, or else secondary impacts, like you're thrown off due to a blast, and then that can cause an impact. Or else it could be due to the blast wave itself, there will be shock induced to your brain, and we want to reduce such shock events. We now understand most of the traumatic brain injury or the most of the concussive events occur due to shear that we are inducing in the brain during impact. That means when you are hitting something, if your head tends to rotate, that can cause more damage because your brain is made up of a lot of water. So it can take a lot of pressure, but it cannot take much shear. So when you try to shear the brain, that can cause more injury. So the modern bicycle helmets are now coming up ways to accommodate shear. And if you think about the carbon nanotube, for example, this can accommodate large amount of shear and also dissipate kinetic energy during the shear event as well. Yeah. So that's also we find as an advantage on these carbon nanotubes.
Theva, you have filed for patents. What is the next stage of your research and where could the next breakthroughs be in carbon nanotube material?
Right. So over the years, we have been mainly focusing on the fundamental studies as we started the lab here. And then most recently, we started working with our industrial partners, as I said, combat helmet manufacturer, bicycle helmet manufacturers, as well as the ski helmet manufacturers, as well as helmets for construction industry, for example. In those places also, there is potential for injuries. So we're working with these partners. So the next step is for us to test these in real helmet scale and explore the potential in realistic conditions. And once we know that, then our ultimate goal is to get the product to the market where it will have impact on saving lives.
Theva, so many possibilities. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your research.
It has been a real pleasure joining you. Thank you for having me.
That was Ramathasan Thevamaran, an associate professor of mechanical engineering at UW-Madison. And earlier, we talked with Medical College of Wisconsin clinical neuropsychologist Mike McCray as we look at the latest advancements in reducing head injuries and protective headgear.